crossroads of empires, battleground of the ages, city of peace and of war. This is Jerusalem, where archaeology uncovers the empires of yesterday, where prophecy decodes the headlines of today. This is where history and prophecy come alive. This is Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. I'm your host, Brent Nachtigall. After 2 weeks away, we are coming to you again from Jerusalem this Sunday. American policy on Iran is under review. That's the message coming from the United States government this past week. Clearly, there's been a change, a decision that's taken place to bring Iran back into the forefront of the United States foreign policy decision making. And it seems that they are following along with the longstanding position from Israel that Iran is the chief danger in the Middle East. And it seems Mr. Trump is looking into the nuclear deal, whether or not he is going to tear up the nuclear deal that's been in effect now for just over a year. Of course, he did campaign on the fact that he was going to remove or tear up that nuclear deal. He said it was completely the worst deal ever negotiated of all time. So is he going to tear up that deal? We'll wait and see. There are some things, though, that looking into the future, we can know about the United States and Iran. Now, it seems that they're going to be more harsh towards Iran, or at least hold Iran to account for what they're doing across the Middle East. But can we expect the United States' actions against Iran to point to a slowing of Iran's march across the Middle East through its proxy organizations? We know it supports Hezbollah, the Houthis in Yemen, Iraqi militias, even its own Revolutionary Guard is on foreign soil across the Middle East. Is the United States going to stop that march? Is it going to stop their march if they did tear up the nuclear deal towards a nuclear weapon? Now, we're going to look at those questions today, and I think I can give you an answer that you won't hear anywhere else as to what the United States policy towards Iran is actually going to accomplish. But first, we're going to look at a few of these statements. The first one we'll hear came from Mr. Trump himself during a press briefing this Thursday.
As far as Iran is concerned, I think they are doing a tremendous disservice to an agreement that was signed. It was a terrible agreement. It shouldn't have been signed. It shouldn't have been negotiated the way it was negotiated. I'm all for agreements, but that was a bad one, as bad as I've ever seen negotiated. They are not living up to the spirit of the agreement, I can tell you that. And we're analyzing it very, very carefully, and we'll have something to say about it in the not-too-distant future. But Iran has not lived up to the spirit of the agreement. And they have to do that. They have to do that. So we will see what happens. Thank you very much, John.
We'll see what happens. It's an open-ended threat there, whether the United States is going to tear up the nuclear deal. They have said just the past week that Iran is complying by the nuclear deal. But again, the nuclear deal was a failed deal from the very beginning. Part of that deal, remember, was that the inspectors of the IAEA, the international body that ensures that no nuclear development is taking place outside of what is allowed, well, they aren't even allowed to check on the compliance of the nuclear deal themselves. We were promised, of course, anywhere, anytime inspections, but under this deal, that isn't the case. In fact, Iran does get to take its samples from its declared nuclear sites and then give them to the IAEA for inspection. So obviously there are plenty of flaws to see whether Iran is sticking to this nuclear deal, whether in fact they are moving forward with their nuclear program or not. Nevertheless, though, Mr. Trump did come out and he decided that this was the week to say that Iran is on notice. They are breaking the nuclear deal. And now we're going to have a look and analyze the situation over the next couple of weeks and then come out and have a decision on whether to keep it or not. Now I want to go to Mr. Rex Tillerson. He is the Secretary of State of Mr. Trump. And in this next speech, this was just a speech by him coming out to discuss the administration's view of what Iran is doing right now, even outside the nuclear agreement.
The Trump administration is currently conducting across the entire government a review of our Iran policy. Today, I'd like to address Iran's alarming and ongoing provocations that export terror and violence, destabilizing more than one country at a time. Iran is the world's leading state sponsor of terrorism and is responsible for intensifying multiple conflicts and undermining U.S. interest in countries such as Syria, Yemen, Iraq, and Lebanon, and continuing to support attacks against Israel. An unchecked Iran has the potential to travel the same path as North Korea and take the world along with it. The United States is keen to avoid a second piece of evidence that strategic patience is a failed approach. A comprehensive Iran policy requires that we address all of the threats posed by Iran, and it is clear there are many. Iran continues to support the brutal Assad regime in Syria, prolonging a conflict that has killed approximately 500,000 Syrians and displaced millions more. Iran supports the Assad regime even as it commits atrocities against its own people, including with chemical weapons. Iran provides arms, financing, and training, and funnels foreign fighters into Syria. It has also sent members of the Iran Revolutionary Guards to take part in direct combat operations. In Iraq, Iran provides support to some Iraqi militant groups, primarily through the Quds Force, which has been undermining security in Iraq for years. Iran maintains a long-standing hostility towards Israel, providing weapons, training, and funding to Hamas and other Palestinian terrorist organizations. Indeed, and in propaganda, Iran foments discord. Just yesterday, the regime reportedly exhibited a missile marked "Death to Israel" during a military parade. In Yemen, Iran continues to support the Houthis' attempted overthrow of the government by providing military equipment, funding, and training, thus threatening Saudi Arabia's southern border. Interdictions by Emirati forces in Yemen and coalition forces in the Arabian Sea have revealed a complex Iranian network to arm and equip the Houthis. Iranian naval vessels continue to undermine freedom of navigation in the Persian Gulf by harassing U.S. naval vessels that are operating lawfully. Iran has conducted cyber attacks against the United States and our Gulf partners. Iran has been behind terrorist attacks throughout the rest of the world, including a plot to kill Adel al-Jubeir, who was then the Saudi ambassador to the United States. Whether it be assassination attempts, support of weapons of mass destruction, deploying destabilizing militias, Iran spends its treasure and time disrupting peace.
I just want to stop it there, because listening to that list, he was talking about their actions in Syria, their actions in Iraq, their hostility towards Israel, their training of Palestinian organizations such as Hamas, the fact that they're working with the Houthis inside Yemen, arming them as well, and talking about what they're doing to American ships inside the Persian Gulf. These are all things that we have been writing about at Watch Jerusalem, alerting you to talk about how much power Iran actually has across the Middle East. It seems that whenever you talk about Iran or the Middle East, you'll have others that will just like to talk about Saudi Arabia and how wicked and evil they are, their support of those jihadists across the Middle East that are exporting terrorism. And in ways, they have contributed to that in the past, Saudi Arabia. But if you look at the domination that Iran now holds over the Middle East, it is the one fomenting unrest in Syria. It is the one that is gradually, over the past decade, has taken over Iraq through many of its militias, as well as Iraqi politicians. It is the one funding, sending weapons shipments to the Houthis to ensure that they are able to wrest West Yemen away from the government there, that the government that did supports freedom of navigation through the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, as we've discussed here. It's very clear to see that Iran is the one that's pushing for control across the Middle East. It's very clear. And because of that, the United States now, in contrast to the previous 8 years, is reviewing across the whole government their policy towards Iran. Now, what about the nuclear deal? Let's get back to that, because that's important. Iran with nuclear bombs and nuclear weapons is something that this world should be fearful of. And Mr. Tillerson then goes on to discuss this.
Any discussion of Iran is incomplete without mentioning the JCPOA. The JCPOA fails to achieve the objective of a non-nuclear Iran. It only delays their goal of becoming a nuclear state. This deal represents the same failed approach of the past that brought us to the current imminent threat we face from North Korea. The Trump administration has no intention of passing the buck to a future administration on Iran. The evidence is clear. Iran's provocative actions threaten the United States, the region, and the world. As I indicated at the beginning, the Trump administration is currently conducting a comprehensive review of our Iran policy. Once we have finalized our conclusions, we will meet the challenges Iran poses with clarity and conviction. Thank you.
So that's how Mr. Tillerson ended his press briefing this week, talking about that this administration is not going to pass the buck or what's going on with Iran to another administration. They're going to deal with it. They're going to conduct their review, and then they're going to act with clarity and conviction. And really, for those that have watched Iran over the past 20 years march across the Middle East, this looks to be a welcome sea change, a refreshing sea change, somebody that is actually going to stand up to what Iran is doing. He said the evidence is clear, so give it a couple of weeks and we'll see what the United States intends to do. Now, this last statement I want to cover happened this week as well. This was at the United Nations. Nikki Haley, the outspoken ambassador of the United States to the United Nations, said it's time now to focus on Iran. Focus on Iran and what it's doing through its proxy Hezbollah. We're sick of everybody focusing in this body of Israel, on Israel. The only democracy in the Middle East, the only one that guarantees freedoms across the Middle East to the degree that it does. So let's stop focusing on Israel and let's focus on Iran, in particular Hezbollah. Let's take a listen to what she said this week.
By breaking out of old, familiar, counterproductive patterns, we might actually achieve something valuable. If we are speaking honestly about conflict in the Middle East, we need to start with the chief culprit, Iran and its partner militia, Hezbollah. Iran and Hezbollah conspire together to destabilize the Middle East, and their actions are expanding. For decades, they have committed terrorist acts across the region. Today, they prop up Bashar al-Assad's brutality, fighting alongside his forces, adding to the killing of thousands of civilians and the misery of millions of refugees. They train deadly militias in Iraq and arm Houthi militants in Yemen. While this council has paid too little attention to this growing menace, the United States will not. We're going to speak up about Iran and Hezbollah, and we're going to act against their lawlessness.
So notice that again, that was Nikki Haley to the UN Security Council just this past week, and says from now on, we are going to speak up against Iran for what it's doing across the Middle East, and we're going to act on its lawlessness. Now, they're pretty strong words coming from the most powerful military in the world. And really, labeling Iran as the chief culprit for the destabilization of the Middle East is a fact. It's true. It's right. It's correct. But again, what is the United States able to do about Iran? Now, all three of these statements, they amount to a huge policy change in the United States going from the last 8 years to this government. And so policy change really that Mr. Netanyahu has noted, and he's obviously in on it and aware of it. We had Mr. Mattis in Israel this past week, the Secretary of Defense of Mr. Trump's administration. And just following those meetings, Mr. Netanyahu had a conversation with Fox News' Sean Hannity in Jerusalem. And this is what he said after seeing these statements from the United States.
There's no question that the deal with Iran, which paves the way to eventual Iranian acquisition of the critical elements of nuclear bombs, a nuclear arsenal, something we don't accept and never sign on the deal. And we won't let happen. But because many in the region are threatened by that same Iran and would be immeasurably threatened more by a nuclear-armed Iran, that has brought a lot of the countries in the region to a different thinking about Israel. And so I think this is potent with possibilities, ultimately for peace, but certainly for our common security. And I think there's a recognition of that today in Washington by President Trump, by Secretary Mattis, with whom I just met.
You met with him earlier, yeah.
Yes, and by Secretary Tillerson, I talked to him as well. I think we realize that we face common challenges. And the greatest challenge is the challenge of militant Islam of both kinds, the Shiite variety led by Iran, the Sunni variety led by ISIS. Of the two, both have to be rolled back and defeated. But of the two, the greater long-term danger is from Iran. It's a country of 80 million. It's got oil. It's got other resources. It's developing submarines, developing precision-guided rockets and missiles. It's developing developing nuclear weapons down the line, satellites. Have that power in the hands of a militant Islamic regime, and the whole world is threatened. And therefore, you know, a lot of in the Arab world understand it. We in Israel understand it. And I could say today that Washington understands it. That's an important change.
That's an important change from this administration to the previous one, that now Washington understands the threat that Iran does face, not just to Israel, for the world. And so, the United States is having a change of policy towards Iran. But will it work? Let's look to the future. Will it make this change of policy make Iran change its course? Will it be strong enough to turn around the Islamic regime on the course that really they've been set about since 1979. Now, we're going to take a short break after hearing those three or four news clips. And when we return, we're going to answer that question of whether the United States, the most powerful military force in the world, will be able to stop Iran's rise. We'll take a break and then we'll answer that question.
This is Watch Jerusalem on KPCG.fm.
The prophet Daniel wrote about a future confrontation between a power in the north and the king of the south. We are now in the time when these two major powers are quickly rising. The king of the south is stirring up trouble even today. It is critical that you know the identity of this prophesied power. For more, request our booklet, King of the South. Visit thetrumpet.com and click the Literature tab to select your free booklet.
Watch Jerusalem.
Welcome back to Watch Jerusalem. We're discussing today the changing policy of the United States towards Iran, and we're going to responding to those statements from the Trump administration just this past week that looks like the Trump administration is going to have a much stronger, robust, and firm policy on Iran than the previous administration, trying to, in fact, stop its rise. And we're going to answer the question today, will the United States be able to stop Iran's rise? I want to go back a little bit and cover a little bit of history here, because we've really been saying that Iran was going to rise for the past 25 years to the point that it would be the dominant Middle Eastern nation and will actually lead radical Islam, which it is right now, as the largest state sponsor of terrorism. But it wasn't always like that. In the 1980s, Iran was a geopolitical nobody. The Islamic Revolution in 1979, that only lasted about 17 months before the nation was attacked by Iraq under Saddam Hussein, and that entered them into a devastating war that really ground on through most of the 1980s. Iran's allies, only major allies at that time, were Syria and Libya. And this conflict included the widespread use of ballistic missiles, even chemical weapons, as some of you might remember. It inflicted hundreds of billions of dollars in damage. It saw cities in Iran, oil infrastructure. We saw devastation. We saw trade wars. The economic wealth, really, of hundreds of thousands of people was blasted by that war. Iran was devastated through the 80s. Then once we got into the early 90s, 1991, the number of Iran's military personnel, that dropped 30% in 1991 from just 3 years earlier. It had a smaller army than Iraq. It had less than nations like Italy and South Korea even. And at that time, or at least in 1990, Iran's gross national product was 42% lower than what it was before the revolution, 12 years earlier. According to a research paper at the Directorate of Intelligence for the CIA, inflation at that time as well had surged higher than wages and forced many Iranians to seek second or third sources of income to get by. Unemployment in the early 90s hovered around 30%. Now that Iran at that point wasn't strong at all in the early 90s, especially considering who was next door in Iraq, and considering Egypt as well, considering Saudi Arabia and the petrodollars they had pouring into their states. And yet at that time, in 1992, Watch Jerusalem editor-in-chief Gerald Flory, he said that Iran's fortunes were about to change. He said that a new power was about to rise up and dominate the Middle East. And he said that this power would grow eventually strong enough to aggressively push against not just other nations inside the Middle East, but against the West, and specifically against a resurgent Europe. Now, the power block he identified was radical Islam led by Iran. Iran, this outcast nation, Mr. Flory said, would become a powerful regional bloc on a foundation not of necessarily oil, money, technology, or arms, but on a unique combination of fervent religion and immoral terrorism, radical Islam. Now, at the time he said this, the Soviet Union had just collapsed. China's economic growth was uneventful. Europe was basically a protectorate still of the United States, which was, at that point, the world's sole superpower. Islam itself continued to be deeply divided, and the Iranians were more of an irritant, really, than a threat to the United States. And Europe didn't even have a solid power block for Islam at that point to push against, even if it could. Yet, Mr. Flory wrote in July 1992, that the King of the South, this upcoming regional power, quote, could rule Iraq or Iran or both countries, but it is looking more like Iran may produce this king. So that's interesting. He's saying that there is going to be this powerful nation that is going to rule over other nations, even in the Middle East, that's going to have a type of conglomerate of nations or an axis of power, and that is going to be headed by Iran. Now, he based that on a very important prophecy that's found over in Daniel chapter 11, and specifically a prophecy that's mentioned in verse 40. Now, Daniel chapter 11, as even we've covered on this show, is a powerful discussion about these two powers, the King of the North and the King of the South. Anciently, the ancient fulfillment of this took place between the Seleucid Kingdom, the King of the North, that was centered in around Syria, that extended over into Asia Minor, into Turkey, and that extended across into across Iraq. Now, that would have numerous battles against the King of the South, which was a kingdom based in Egypt. And yet, when it comes to modern times, this prophecy in verse 40 does discuss the latter times. There is going to be a new King of the South, and there is going to be a new King of the North. Now, if you want to look further into this prophecy, it'd be great to request Gerald Flory's book, The King of the South. It's a substantial text, and it's got plenty of proof in there to show both the ancient and the new type, or the new fulfillment of this King of the South. And it lays out a lot of history. It also lays out the actions that Iran is taking right now to the point that it can fulfill this prophecy. And it's interesting as we ever since the early 1990s, we've looked at Iran as becoming the main nation in the Middle East. By main, we mean that, and it's even obvious today, that the other nations of the Middle East are basically reacting to what Iran does or doesn't do. It dictates its policy, and then others will then decide what they're going to do based around Iran. And even as Mr. Tillerson noted earlier, we can see Iran's hold over the Middle East right now. It's stretching all the way to the Red Sea, stretching all the way to the Eastern Mediterranean. And it's even leading some of the Sunni states in Arab states to ally with Israel, if you can believe that. They know how strong Iran is. So we've said that Iran is the king of the South for 25 years. And this change of the United States government, this is just this past week, and those speeches, especially one that Mr. Tillerson gave, were basically a stamp on that prophecy saying, yes, Iran is the king of the South. Now, the previous administration didn't believe that. They didn't believe that they were the main cause of the destabilization of the whole Middle East, that they had a goal not just to destroy Israel, but to take over much of the world, really, to push against a united Europe, to push against America. Now, Israel's known that, and Israel's known that Iran was this powerful nation, if we're going to call it what the Bible calls it. Israel knew that they were the king of the South, but the United States didn't. Even going back to Mr. Bush's time, who did he decide to attack? Well, he took out Saddam Hussein and really left the king of the South next door intact. And actually, because of he removed Saddam Hussein, actually made Iran stronger. Well, now everyone looks around, or at least the United States now can look around and look around the Middle East and see that Iran is leading the radical Islamist bloc that has a lot of power right now and that wants to use its power and has been using its power in a very pushy way across the Middle East. Now, I want to just read this prophecy here from Daniel 11, verse 40. It says this, "And at the time of the end shall the king of the South push at him, and the king of the North," the king of the North here is being pushed at by the king of the South, "the king of the North shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over." Overflow and pass over. So really it's important to notice this prophecy because it shows us that although the United States right now does recognize Iran, though they're not going to put it in biblical terms, they recognize Iran as the strongest power in the Middle East that can and that is trying to take over the Middle East, that is trying to export its terrorism across the world even, and that they are the danger that needs to be dealt with. Although they recognize that, as we've been saying for 25 years, if you don't believe us, read the booklet on the King of the South. Though they recognize that, this prophecy indicates that America is not the nation that puts a stop to Iran, that puts a stop to Iran's pushiness. In fact, it is this King of the North. Now, who is this King of the North? You can request our booklet, Germany and the Holy Roman Empire, if you like. That really discusses who this King of the North is. It discusses this clash that is coming between a united Europe led by Germany and Iran. Now, looking at the statements from Mr. Tillerson, Mr. Trump, and even Nikki Haley, they say that America is going to act, but how effective is that act going to be? Now, Bible prophecy doesn't tell us whether or not the United States is going to act militarily against Iran, but it tells us that the United States can't put a stop to Iran's rise because Iran is still able to push at the King of the North. So we can answer that question that we posed at the very beginning. Is the United States going to do something that will slow Iran's march across the Middle East? Maybe temporarily. Maybe temporarily it will. Bible prophecy doesn't say that, but it says that it will not be able to do significant damage to Iran's ambition. In fact, it's going to be Europe. Europe, who for the past 60 years has lived under the protection of the United States through NATO. And yet, it's going to act by itself at this point to take out an Iran, a pushy Iran that decides it's going to push not just at Israel, not just at the United States, but at Europe itself. Now, this is just a really pivotal prophecy that is going to... Now, this is just a really pivotal prophecy here in Daniel, in which a lot of geopolitics revolve around in the end time in these latter days. And if you want to discuss more of the ramifications of that, or even why the United States isn't even mentioned here in Daniel chapter 11, why not? Why isn't the prophetic name for the United States here? Well, you can answer those questions by reading our book written by Gerald Flory, The King of the South. Please request this booklet. It's free. You can go to watchjerusalem.co.il, hit the literature tab, and it's there. You can get a PDF, or you can order it there online to be sent to you wherever you are in the world. That's it for today's show. Thanks very much for listening. You've been listening to Watch Jerusalem, where history and prophecy come alive.